an impossible foe, possessor of visions, ally of dark forces, friend of monsters, leader of men. Only he will have the will and the power, through his love of another, to break time and the world. The words resonated with me. I was the one meant for the power and the greatness. My family name came from the very axe now strapped to me, the very weapon used by my forefathers. My father had been a great general. As one of the younger sons, I had been sent away for an education, expected to manage the family fortune. Yet I had failed and become a soldier, and eventually a commander. My task was to pacify this land for the crown and deliver its treasure unto my king and its inhabitants' souls to my mother church. I had visions of leading my host to glory. As for darkness, I had no doubt that my concubine and her cabal of heart-removing priests and their rivers of sacrificial blood would serve that purpose. "So what does this mean? What must I do now?" I asked. The priestess did not answer. She reached into the alcove and removed the small rectangular box. She shouted something in her language, and the rush of air changed direction, as if something massive had just exhaled. I held out my hand, and she placed the box gently in my palm. It was small, but unnaturally heavy. I shuddered as cold shivers pulsed down my arm. "What is this?"
"It is the key, my lord. Alone, it is an object of mighty strength, capable of great magic. But when you are prepared, I can take you to the proper place, a place of power. There you can utilize it to inflict your will upon the entire world. No one shall stand in your way. The world will be yours."
"Is that all?"
"There is but one last thing to fulfill the prophecy, my lord. You must do it through love of another. You are a lover of power, but not of people. You must do so to utilize the artifact. Love is a notion of the weak, yet through it, great power can be unlocked. It is a tool to be used as needed."
"I have a wife and children in Lisboa. Will that not suffice?" I did not have time for weak notions such as love or mercy, not when there was plunder to be taken and lands to be crushed. A wife of good blood was a political necessity and a way to produce heirs, nothing more.
"Perhaps not, my lord, but I will provide a way."
The priestess untied the front of her robes and let them fall to the slick floor.
"I can be your love. Together, we can rule the world."
The damp wind picked up again, as if the cavern itself was filling unseen lungs, far greater in intensity this time. My torch was blown out, plunging us into darkness. I was sitting on the steps of the church, once again in my own body, and seeing the world through my own eyes. Reliving the cursed one's memories left me feeling unclean. The old man had gone back to his carving, gently flicking the blade of his knife over the small block of wood. Chips were falling onto his homespun pants. Even if the clear winter sky around me was a figment of my imagination, it was a far nicer place than the mysterious, unnatural cavern. "Why are you showing me these things?"
"So you understand. It's important."
"What is important? That Machado was an evil bastard when he was human?
So bad that even the Aztecs or the Incas or whoever they were prophesied him coming, and that some mysterious old ones wanted to give him a magical whatchamacallit to blow up the world?
You not have name for that people. They are gone. World not know about them today. It's probably for best. But there is more, boy. You must pay attention more.
Pay attention to what more? He was about to score with the evil priestess chick. That was pretty hard to miss, I replied.
Young people, mind always in gutter. No, more important things to learn.
How about you just tell me how to kill him? He shrugged.
I not know.
Who are the old ones? The Elf Queen mentioned them also.
Very bad. Very much bad. I not know. But they here long before us. Not supposed to be, but they are, how you say, trespassers. They want nothing more than to kill world. They kill anything they not can have.
He used his coat sleeve to brush aside the snow on one of the steps, creating a clear spot. He placed his carving on the smooth surface and spun it. The little top made it only a few turns before flopping over. It looked like crap and was horribly unbalanced. He was not very good at whittling.
Your top is broken. It's not top, it's dreidel. Fun little game. Should be made out of clay, but I try wood.
He picked it up and went back to carving.
No laugh, boy. It's harder than it looks. Time for you to go. You wake up now. Be careful of big red thing. No want to crash.
What big red thing?
You see.
I woke up disoriented and confused. I was lying on some sort of gurney, and I cracked my face painfully into a white metal cabinet when I sat up. Julie was a few feet away, also lying on a stretcher. Her shirt had been cut away, and a much better bandage had been placed on her shoulder. She was still out. A siren was blaring. We were in the back of an ambulance.
"What the hell?"
I said, as the ambulance turned far too sharply and I bounced off of the wall. Mad laughter came from the front.
"Hang on, kid. It's been a while since I've driven last. You know, with being locked up and all that."
Ray Shackelford honked the horn and screamed out the window.
"Watch out, moron!"
I squeezed my way through the narrow space and into the passenger seat. I had to push aside a big black duffel bag. I was glad to see that it was the bag that held my armor and personal gear, including spare magazines and grenades for Abomination. My shotgun was sitting on the dash, sliding crazily back and forth as Ray jerked the wheel. The speedometer showed 105 miles an hour. I had not known that an ambulance could go that fast.
"What happened?"
I shouted over the siren. Ray's gray hair was flapping madly in the wind from the open window. He was grinning maniacally and having far too much fun for an escaped lunatic.
"You passed out. Can't say I blame you. You looked like shit. Julie had a cell phone in her pocket. It started ringing, so naturally I answered it. It was Earl."
The crazy man laughed.
"Old son of a bitch was a bit surprised to find himself talking to me. Didn't expect that one bit. Well, anyway..."
He swerved around a truck and into oncoming traffic, dodged a station wagon, and jerked back into the correct lane. I cringed.
"As I was saying, Earl called, said that the feds were heading this way fast. They put out an APB on me and both of you. He said not to go to the hospital because the Monster Control Bureau guys were already en route, and not to go back to the compound because the place was already crawling with feds, so I was supposed to take us someplace safe to hide out."
"You didn't kill any of the paramedics, did you?" I gestured at Abomination.
Oh, no. I've never killed a human being. On purpose, at least. So I ain't gonna start now. I bluffed our way out. Told them I was an escaped mental patient.
Gee whiz. I'm surprised they believed you. I had not realized, but he was wearing sweats and a bathrobe. With the matted hair and the unkempt beard, he looked the part. Plus, when I had passed out, he had been singing the theme song from the Monkees.
I know. Imagine that.
He scratched himself as we tore down the road. Julie needs medical attention.
Earl has arranged for some. Don't worry. We're going home.
But the compound is covered in feds.
Nope. You'll see. Earl said, go to your house, Ray. You can remember how to get there. Just go home.
Ray turned to look at me as he explained. Crazy people must use the force to drive or something.
We're going home. It'll be just like old times. All the kids, Ray the Fifth, Julie, even little Nate, they can play in the treehouse. And Susan will be there, too. It'll be great. We can have a barbecue.
Ray, watch the road. I noticed flashing red lights ahead. He was no longer living in the same world. Instead, he was taking a little trip down memory lane.
Maybe there'll be an Alabama game on today. Roll Tide. That would be fun. Maybe even the Alabama versus Auburn game. Best game of the year. Yep, I lost a lot of money on that one last season, I tell you what.
I realized that the flashing lights originated at a train crossing. The crossing arms were coming down.
Train. Ray, brake. Hit the brakes.
He turned and studied it absently.
Yep, train. How about that? You like hot dogs or hamburgers? Susan might have even marinated some steaks if we're lucky.
I watched in horror as the train came into view. The engine was enormous and red. We were not going to make it in time. I shoved my way over into the driver's seat, squishing Ray painfully into the door. I stomped my boot down on the brake and fought for control of the wheel. The tires locked up with a squeal, leaving behind plenty of rubber and smoke. Ray tried to fight me. I elbowed him violently in the forehead, snapping his head back against the seat. Keeping the van under control while braking and fighting for the wheel against an insane man while barreling toward a train is not a pleasant experience. Luckily, the ambulance had some decent brake pads installed. We broke through the wooden safety rail with a slow crack and skidded to a halt, our front bumper inches from the sparking train wheels.
Carjacking! Carjacking!
He shouted in my ear as he tried to stick his thumb in my eye. Ray kept fighting, unaware that I had just saved his life. He tried to choke me with the seatbelt, so I elbowed him in the face until he stopped moving. It took 3 good blows to his noggin to put him out. I'll admit I enjoyed that part. I put the van in park and crawled back out the passenger door. I went around, deafened by the roar of the train only scant feet away, opened the door, after a moment found the switch to kill the highly annoying siren, pulled Ray's unconscious body out of the driver's side, and set him on the gurney in the back. There were straps to hold down thrashing patients, and I applied them snugly. Julie stirred. Her eyes fluttered open.
"Owen, what's going on?"
she mumbled sleepily.
"Wait a second."
As she realized that her shirt was cut open, and she was only wearing a bra beneath.
"Pervert."
"Hey, blame the paramedics. Listen, Julie, I don't have time to explain. We need to get you someplace that your dad called home. Earl is going to have help for you there." She was obviously high on painkillers or something that the paramedics had given her. She smiled absently.
"Hey, what happened to Dad?"
He got sedated. Look, can you give me directions? Earl said for us to go home. Not the compound, but some place your dad would think of as home.
Sure. I can find home. Where are we?
I don't know. Look, I'm going to help you to the front seat. You just stay awake and tell me where to go, okay?
Okay. Can do. And look, next time you want to see me naked, just ask. Don't cut up my clothes. That's creepy. And I like this shirt.
Her eyes closed, and she went back to sleep. I carried her to the passenger side, as gently as was possible, careful not to disturb her wound or bandages. I buckled her into place as the last of the train cars passed. Julie stirred and mumbled something. What?
I know this place. We're near Greenville. Just keep going.
Her speech was slurred, but she did not appear to be losing any more blood. I decided that if she started to look any worse, I was going to take her to the nearest town and doctor. Keeping from getting arrested was not worth her life. Hopefully I would not have to make that choice. I put the ambulance into drive and continued down the road. Chapter 17 The home that Ray Shackelford had been referring to was an enormous old plantation house nestled in a beautiful patch of woods and streams. It was far off of the main drive and isolated from the rest of the world. The home had been opulent at one time, but had fallen into disrepair. Thick Doric columns, cracked with age, lined the front porch. Moss and vines were growing up some of the walls, but it appeared as if some recent efforts had been made to paint and restore the old place. There was a black sedan parked near the dry fountain in front of the home. I parked the van near the entrance, honked the horn, and jumped out to help Julie. She had remained semi-lucid for the remainder of the short trip, but she was pale and did not look very good. Despite her feeble protest that she could do it herself, I picked her up in my arms and carried her onto the porch. She was not light by any means, but rather heavier than she appeared because of lean muscle. She winced in pain as the pressure changed against her wound. The main door was open, leaving only a screen.
"Hey! Anybody there? We need help!" I yelled.
"Z! Thank goodness!"
It was good to hear Tripp's voice. The screen door opened and he stepped out. A smaller figure stood behind him, totally cloaked in what appeared to be a black burka.
"Come on, we have a spot ready. Earl said Gretchen here's as good as any doctor."
The robed figure nodded. Only a small patch of her face was showing through her hood, and even then her eyes were covered with large mirrored sunglasses. She gestured for me to follow. I cradled Julie's limp form against my chest as we hurried down the entry hall. The interior of the home was undergoing serious renovation. Flooring had been pulled up and was in various states of repair. Some walls had been painted, while others were a work in progress. Sawdust and miscellaneous tools littered the floor. Gretchen led us across the spacious parlor, through a huge dining room complete with chandelier and 20-foot table, down a small hallway, and into what was probably meant to be a guest bedroom, though right now it looked a bit like an extemporaneous field hospital. A small table had been moved into the room, covered by a white cloth, and littered with strange surgical-looking implements and jars filled with unknown fluids. Gretchen nodded toward the bed, and I placed Julie down as gently as possible. Julie's eyes peeked out from under heavy lids.
"I can't see,"
she said. I began to panic. The blow to her head, had it blinded her? Was Julie going to lose her sight? She was a lover of art,
and an amazing marksman. Going blind would kill her. I grabbed her hand and squeezed. Don't worry. It's going to be okay. I'm here for you. I'm sure your sight will come back.
Owen.
She closed her eyes and sighed.
You big dummy. Of course my sight will come back. My glasses are on the floor of the ambulance. Be a dear and grab them for me. Is that Gretchen?
The robed woman came over and patted Julie's forehead. I had not noticed that the strange woman was wearing surgical gloves.
Hey, Gretchen, honey. I'm glad you're here. I'm going back to sleep now.
She mumbled as she drifted off. Gretchen took her gloved hand from Julie's head and immediately started to remove the blood-stained bandage. The petite-robed woman examined the injury. The wound path actually started behind the point of Julie's shoulder and traveled down into the muscles over her shoulder blade. It was a nasty puncture. I had seen a few knife wounds like that while I'd been bouncing, but never one that big or at such an angle. The mysterious woman must have then realized that I was still in the room. She looked up until I saw my reflection in her mirrored shades, and she made a shooing motion.
Me?
I pointed at myself. She nodded and kept waving her hands at me.
Sorry.
I backed out of the room and gently closed the door behind me. Trip was waiting for me.
Don't worry. Earl said Gretchen's the best. She's supposed to be able to fix any injury. Milo and Sam swear by her. I guess we're supposed to leave her alone to do her thing.
Any relation to Skippy? They share the same fashion sense.
Yeah. They said she's one of his wives. I think she's the tribal healer,
he said.
Wives? With an S? As in plural?
That was a bit surprising.
Sam said he's got like 5 of them. Hey, different cultures. Whatever works, I guess.
Dang. I don't even have a girlfriend, and Skippy has extra wives, I replied.
No wonder. You look like shit,
Holly said from behind me. Between her sultry looks, her swimsuit model's body, and the .308 Vepr in her hands, she looked like she should have been in a James Bond movie.
You're bleeding all over the carpet. What the hell did you do to yourself this time?
I turned to regard her and smiled broadly.
I fell out of the van while it was moving.
You should stick with accounting. Holy crap. You have gravel stuck in your arms. Sit down, I'll grab some iodine. Trip, get a towel. And by the way, the property is clear. I didn't see anybody out there.
Julie's dad is strapped down in the back of the ambulance. He's out cold. You should probably see him first, I told them as I studied my shredded arms. They looked almost as bad as I felt.
Is he hurt? Trip asked. I'm no Gretchen, but I know first aid.
Mildly concussed, probably. Crazy son of a bitch tried to drive us into a train, so I clocked him in the head until he quit. Watch him. He's nuts. Find a room to lock him in and keep him tied up. Preferably chained to something heavy.
You really are a people person, aren't you? Give me the keys, too. I'll hide the ambulance around back.
I tossed them over. He left to retrieve Ray.
I'm not kidding. Lock him in the attic if we have one,
I shouted after him.
And check the room to make sure there aren't any weapons in it.
Holly forced me to take a seat in the kitchen while she raided the extensive first aid kit. I sat next to the marble sink with my shirt off while she painfully removed each piece of bloody gravel with a pair of needle-nose pliers. The kitchen was also under construction. Someone had pulled down most of the cabinets to be restained, and a pair of sawhorses and some plywood served as the kitchen table. Mercy was not Holly's strong suit, and after violently ripping each piece free, she dropped them into the sink with a clatter. It was not a pleasant experience.
She told me about how after Julie had called from the asylum, Earl had immediately loaded up a response team in the chopper to come to our rescue, only to be intercepted and forced to return to the compound by the Monster Control Bureau's helicopters. While the feds were watching them land, Earl had called to check on our status and had gotten Ray instead. Since Holly and Tripp were considered mere untrained newbies by the feds, and not really important in the grand scheme of things, he had given them directions to the Shackelford family home and had them sneak off with Gretchen.
"What's this stuff? Looks like you got splashed with slag from a cutting torch or something,"
she asked as she removed a chunk of metal from my arm. It left a small hole that immediately began to well up with blood. Gargoyles bleed molten. I beat one of them to death with a 50-barrel. It kind of got on me.
"No kidding?"
I flinched as she jerked out a particularly pointy piece of asphalt. "No biggie. It only had one arm. And it was stuck under the van. It was the bastard that stabbed Julie. I lost the barrel, so I finished it off with a tire iron. When I cracked its head, it kind of just squirted everywhere."
"You rushed a giant monster with an empty gun to save her?"
She jabbed me with the pliers.
"I guess. Ow!
Careful." I grimaced as she grabbed a chunk of flesh instead of rock.
"Hold still, you big sissy. Look, Z, let me be honest here. I'm getting a little worried about you. Seriously."
Holly sounded earnest. She paused to wipe her brow. It was uncomfortably warm and stuffy in the kitchen.
"Back on the freighter, you were willing to play chicken with a vampire to save Julie. And now you take on a damn 10-ton gargoyle with a stinking tire iron to protect her?"
"It wasn't that big. And on the freighter, I pulled that grenade to save all of us, not just her."
"Sure."
She did not sound convinced.
"Z, I'm not stupid. I can see how you get all dopey around her.
Whatever.
I don't want to see you do something stupid and get killed for her is all."
"Nothing that I wouldn't do for anybody else," I said defensively.
"I don't doubt that either. You would probably do something stupid to save anybody. You and Tripp both. Idiot wannabe heroes who would probably run into a burning building to save kittens or some shit. I'm surrounded by idiots."
"I didn't know you cared." I grinned. She stabbed me again.
"Trust me on this one, Z. There'll come a time when you're going to have to make a choice. Somebody who you can't save no matter what. And then you're going to have to choose. You can either save yourself, or you can die trying. Sometimes the choice is between running like a coward or fighting like a fool."
Holly sounded angry as she said that. "What are you trying to say?"
"Just something I learned the hard way is all. You know, before..."
She trailed off, then changed the subject.
"I think that's the last of it. I'm going to put some iodine on this now. You're missing a ton of skin, so this might sting."
"Before what?" I pressed. "You're the only newbie who has never told us how you got into this business. Everybody knows about my werewolf, or Tripp's zombies, or Lee's spiders. Holly, you're tough as nails, and you don't take crap off of anybody, but you're buttoned up so tight about your past. What happened before? You know you can tell me it."
"Yeah!"
I screamed as horrible, burning pain ripped through the raw nerves of my arms.
"Oh, my bad. That wasn't iodine. That was rubbing alcohol. All your babbling distracted me. Now shut the hell up," she ordered.
I did as I was told. I wasn't going to push it while she still had that bottle of liquid pain. Damn, that hurt. The iodine stung, but it was nothing in comparison. Tripp returned after he had secured Ray and had hidden the stolen ambulance.
"What did I miss?"
he asked.
"Holly, you don't look happy. Nothing, she replied stonily. Hold still. Some of these holes are going to need stitches.
Gretchen could do it, probably.
She's busy. Julie has a real injury. This is just a boo-boo. Besides, I know what I'm doing. This won't hurt a bit. Well, actually, it'll probably hurt like a son of a bitch. Bite down on something, she suggested.
Tripp pulled up a chair and sat down next to the improvised table.
I put Julie's dad in a bedroom upstairs. I checked the room for weapons, found this. I think Julie has loaded guns stashed in every room of this place.
He placed a .45 Beretta in front of him.
Don't worry, though. I've got him handcuffed to a wrought iron bed frame. He isn't going anywhere.
I thought about that for a moment. It beat thinking about the needle that Holly was running thread through. I hated getting stitches. I had done it plenty of times without local anesthesia. Illegal fighting rings did not exactly have the best insurance. Where exactly did you get handcuffs?
He shrugged. They were in one of the gear bags. They're mine, Holly said.
Tripp jumped.
She looked up at us in consternation. Get your mind out of the gutter. Damn, I am supposed to be the support person, remember? I was just thinking ahead. Earl said we had a dangerous crazy guy to babysit.
Sorry, Tripp said.
Bible thumper,
she muttered under her breath as she stuck the curved needle through my skin.
No, really, I didn't mean... Whatever, Tripp. Just because I dance naked for money doesn't make me a whore. Sorry. That wasn't even what I was thinking, he replied, raising his hands defensively.
Holly was quiet as she continued stitching me up. Tripp was too dark to blush, but he was obviously embarrassed.
I'll go check on Gretchen.
He left the room in a hurry. I watched as the tear in my flesh gradually closed. She did good work. I felt the need to defend my friend. I don't think Tripp was judging you. He's real religious, but he isn't that way at all.
I know, she continued stitching. He's probably the nicest guy I've ever met. And he's real innocent at heart. At least as much as somebody can be in this job.
She finished closing the gash. You're pretty good at that. I should know. I've been stitched up plenty of times. I've even done it to myself when I didn't have help, I told her.
Thanks.
She tied off the end.
I learned how in nursing school.
You were in nursing school?
Yeah. Don't act so surprised. You think I took a degrading job because of the quality people I got to hang around? I needed to pay bills, you know.
I'm not. I understand.
I was at UNLV. I only had a couple of semesters left, is all. And don't ask.
Got it. I understood. There seemed to be no shortage of monster hunters with secrets in their past. She finished stitching me up and wrapped clean gauze over my arms.
That's about all that I can do, she said. You need to get some rest, and you probably need to eat. I saw some food in the fridge. Tripp and I will keep watch tonight.
Thanks, I told her. She stood and stretched, then retrieved her rifle and slung it over her back. She paused on her way out of the kitchen.
Think about what I said earlier. I don't want you getting killed for no reason.
I promise I won't, I replied.
Whatever. Stupid heroes.
She left the room.
Sweet dreams, Z.
I picked one of the many bedrooms on the top floor. The plan was for all of us to sleep in the same general part of the house. Splitting up seemed like a stupid thing to do, considering that we did not know how safe we were here from the Cursed One's minions. It was a small room, and the walls were bare sheetrock, but the bed was soft, and I was exhausted and still in pain. I popped a handful of Tylenol and hoped that it would help. There were plenty of stronger painkillers in the ambulance, but the last thing I wanted was to be groggy. It took me a few minutes to find a comfortable spot on the bed where nothing was rubbing a scabbed-over patch of missing skin. That was rather difficult, considering the extent of my road rash. The cursed one was coming. I knew that. I could feel it in my bones. I knew that he was close. I was not aware of how I knew that, but somehow I knew. Ray was the key. Something in the man's head was the secret that Lord Machado was looking for. Some bit of knowledge gleaned from his own forbidden studies in breaking the laws of nature and bringing back the dead. I would kill Ray Shackelford myself before I let him fall into the hands of the enemy. I did not relish the thought of murdering a human being, but it beat the alternative. I was asleep in minutes. My dreams that night were brief. The old man did not pay me a visit, and thankfully I did not have to see the world through the lens of the cursed one's memories. For most of the night I slept like a normal man, not bound by strange visions or plagued with old prophecies and mysteries. I had a brief nightmare, a panicked, disjointed chase through the halls of the Appleton Asylum. This time the gargoyles were much faster. This time I could not save Julie from them. They took her from me and tore the life out of her with their stone claws. A well of rage and hate opened up inside of my soul. Every bit of anger that I had ever possessed was uncorked and unleashed upon my enemies. I crushed the massive, unnatural beings into dust with my bare hands, as if they were nothing. My rage continued, until finally, in my wrath, I destroyed everything around me, leaving nothing but a smoking wasteland of death. I slept. I woke up late the next morning, sunlight streaming through my window. I felt remarkably good, considering how badly beaten up I was. Despite my hectic schedule over the last few weeks and my total lack of downtime, I felt downright refreshed. Rolling out of bed, I could already tell it was going to be a great day. A horrible odor assaulted my senses. My bandages were missing and had been replaced by something foul. A green, tar-like substance was smeared all over my arms. It stunk of dead roadkill and body odor. I gagged reflexively as it hit my nostrils like a hammer.
"Hey! There's something going on!"
I bellowed at the top of my lungs. Considering the weirdness we dealt with in this business, I figured that if you woke up to find yourself coated in strange secretions, it was probably best to alert your co-workers. Unlike most polite jobs, of course. Tripp burst into the bedroom, subgun at the ready, scanning for threats. He must have been right outside the door.
"Something slimed me."
I held up one goo-coated arm.
"Dude, you about gave me a heart attack. What the hell is this?"
I shook my arms and some of the stuff splattered onto the sheets. We were probably going to have to burn them later.
"Don't worry. Gretchen checked on you when she was done working on Julie. After she saw your injury, she made that paste in the kitchen, came up here and smeared it on you. I'm guessing it's supposed to be some sort of salve or something."
I didn't hear a thing, I stated suspiciously. I could not believe that I had slept through that, and certainly not while sober.
"If you haven't noticed, she moves kind of quiet."
"What's in it? It smells terrible."
"If I tell you, you're either going to puke or straight up shoot her.
so I'm not saying anything. Just remember, she's supposed to be the healer. But according to my knowledge of chemistry, I can't think of a thing that it is supposed to do other than reek.
I'm gonna shower. If you see Ninja Doctor, tell her thanks for the slime.
I grabbed my bag and stormed down the hall. At least I had learned from previous mistakes and had packed some extra clothing along with my armor and weapons. A man should always have access to emergency pants. I found a bathroom, eagerly stripped out of my torn clothes, and jumped into the scalding shower. I had not thought that anything could be grosser than the white and vampire fluids I had been sprayed with on the freighter, but I had been very wrong. Under closer examination, the stuff appeared to be vegetable-based, except for the particles that I hesitantly identified as ground bones or teeth. Skippy's wife was one weird chick, not that he was exactly a bastion of normalcy himself. As I was scrubbing the filth off under the steam of hot water, I realized a few things. First, I should have been in intense pain from the water striking my injuries. Second, I wasn't in any pain at all. As the stuff was sluiced away, I discovered that rather than being inflamed and scabbed like my arms should have been on the day after such an accident, they were mostly clear, with only smaller spots of scabbing where the very worst of the injuries had been. The gashes that Holly had sewn shut looked like they had been stitched a week ago instead of last night. Stepping out of the shower, I held my arms above my head in amazement. Other than the discoloration and missing hair, the formerly destroyed patches were well on their way toward healing. I turned my arms over, disbelieving what was directly in front of my eyes. It was a miracle. I quickly dried off and dressed. I found the others in the kitchen. The smell of coffee was strong, and Holly was frying some eggs over the stove. Trip was leaning against a counter, subgun still casually slung, and steaming mug in his hands. Gretchen was nowhere to be seen. Skippy's people did not seem particularly social. Surprisingly, Julie was out of bed and sitting at the improvised table, laughing and talking with the others. She had a small bandage on the side of her head, and there was a larger bandage peeking out from under the edges of her shirt. She smiled when she saw me enter, and she looked 1,000 times better than when I had brought her here only 12 hours ago. Other than the fact that everybody was armed, and there was a flamethrower sitting in the corner, it looked like a breakfast commercial.
"Good morning, Owen," Julie called happily. "Breakfast will be ready in a few minutes," Holly added. "About time you rolled your carcass out of bed. Thanks for all the help with the cooking, both of you."
"Hey, I'm on guard duty," Tripp said as he patted his H&K.
"Whatever. I was wandering around the halls with night vision watching for gargoyles until 3 a.m., so forgive me if I don't cry you a river. Make yourself useful and grab some plates."
"Sorry to interrupt the breakfast club here, guys." I held up my relatively healthy arms. "What the hell is going on?"
"Holy shit!" exclaimed Holly.
She flung her spatula aside and ran over to look. Tripp gasped and dropped a stack of disposable plates on the ground.
"This is way better than it should be. The ones I stitched are about closed." "I told you guys, Gretchen knows her stuff," Julie said. "No way, man," Tripp said as he examined me. "I saw what she boiled up in that pot. It was just a bunch of weeds, dirt, and some teeth. She even put a dead raccoon in it. There's no way, just no way. Screw monster hunting. Let's sell this and get rich," Holly said. "We've been trying to talk her into bottling her tribal cures for years. She won't do it. Says that they have to be specifically prepared for each person, on the spot," Julie answered as she sipped her orange juice.
How's your shoulder? I asked.
Much better. I'm sore, and I can't lift my arm above my head yet, but give me a few days and I'll be fine.
She reached into her pocket and pulled something out. She dropped it onto the center of the plywood. It was a jagged 3-inch piece of stone.
Souvenir. Gretchen pulled this out.
Damn. All three newbies said in unison. She was lucky to be alive, let alone walking around in a pleasant mood.
Seriously, she works magic. All of Skippy's people have gifts. He can do things with that chopper that aren't possible according to the laws of physics. Wait until you meet the rest of his family. They will probably introduce themselves to you when they're comfortable.
I pulled up a chair. They aren't normal people. What are they?
It isn't really my place to say. That's up to them.
She changed the subject.
Eggs are burning.
Holly cursed and returned to the stove. Trip put the plates and some forks on the table.
What about your dad?
He asked.
As far as I care, he can eat spiders. Old house has plenty of them,
she said coldly. I'll take him a plate, I answered.
Suit yourself,
Julie stated as she returned to her juice. I did not know what had transpired between father and daughter while I was taking my tour of the asylum, but obviously it had not been pleasant.
He didn't run off when you two were unconscious. Do we really need to leave him locked up?
Trip asked.
My dad may seem fine sometimes, but don't let him fool you. He saw some things that the human brain isn't wired to deal with. His reality is all screwed up. He's dangerous. Dr. Joan told me that he's tried to escape a bunch of times, and he damn near beat one of their orderlies to death. We let him loose and he'll be trying to raise the dead or something stupid in no time flat.
She shook her head.
I sure as hell am not going to let that man loose on the world. I fight monsters. I don't help them.
So what's the plan? I said. My stomach grumbled loudly. The food smelled great. After we eat, of course.
Sit tight, heal up, stay low, Holly said. That's what Harbinger told us, at least. We're supposed to keep Ray safe and away from the bad guys. He's going to call us as soon as they work out the problems with the feds.
And he's mad at you, Trip added helpfully. What about me? I asked. I had gone along with her after all.
I think they think you're just a big protective dupe is all, Holly said. At least that's the impression I got when he said that you were just a big protective dupe following Julie around like a dumb puppy.
Oh, good.
Then the feds were crawling all over us. They want Ray, and they want him bad. There had to be like 50 of them at the compound. I wonder why Earl didn't just turn Dad over, Julie mused. It isn't like there's any love lost there. If the feds just want to keep his knowledge out of the hands of the cursed one, then they are way better equipped to babysit him than we are. He didn't say, but I've come up with a theory, Tripp said.
We waited.
Well, who all knows about Ray Shackelford and his research? Just MHI and the feds. It isn't exactly public knowledge, I'm guessing, what with all of this being secret and all. The professors who got attacked in Georgia were both well known for their knowledge on esoteric anthropology. Vampires can read books, too. Ray was just another inmate in an asylum. How did they know what he had in his head? How did they know that he was so important? You think one of the Monster Control Bureau agents is talking to the CO?
Holly said. CO? I asked.
Beat saying cursed one over and over again.
Yeah, Trip answered.
If it's only us and them that knows about Ray, somebody must have told the bad guys. How else did they know who he was or even where he was?
Julie thought about it for a moment.
Good point. Humans have worked for evil forces before, especially vampires. They have a way of enthralling the weak-willed. And there is something else. While you were gone yesterday, Lee found some stuff in one of the old journals. Some monster hunter who died back during World War II. We think it was about the cursed one. I didn't get to see it, but the experienced hunters were all freaked out. I mean, really scared. Harbinger, Milo, even Sam. They were freaked. They wanted to show you, and that's when they found out that you had taken off. Those three don't scare easy, Julie stated. This journal scared them. Harbinger was talking about the apocalypse, Holly said as she dished out the scrambled eggs. So that's why I think Harbinger is having us hide your dad. Something he knows is the key that unlocks the gate for the cursed one, and it's very bad news. Like the end of life as we know it kind of stuff. And he thinks some Fed is working for the bad guys. He's scared to death that they're going to get their hands on your dad. He finished his theory and dug into his breakfast. Holly sat down, looking slightly uneasy. She hesitated before speaking. There is one other thing. Trip, you want to tell them?
My friend did not reply. He contemplated his food. Holly did not appear eager to tell us either. Julie broke the silence.
Let me guess. She leaned back in her folding chair. If the bad guys find us, we're supposed to kill my dad ourselves rather than let him fall into their hands. Correct?
The two newbies nodded. Finally, Holly spoke.
I'm sorry. That's what Harbinger told us. He wanted to make sure that we could do it if we needed to. He really accentuated how serious this is.
Julie nodded.
Yeah, I suppose so.
She trailed off.
I'm sorry,
Tripp said. It might be a moot point.
How likely is it that the Cursed One's minions are going to find us here? I asked.
I was not particularly surprised at Harbinger's direction to kill Ray if necessary, having already decided the same thing myself. At least now the others were beginning to understand just how serious the Cursed One was.
This is the old family place. My great-grandfather bought it way back when. It has always kind of been isolated. Legally speaking, nobody lives here. As far as the outside world is concerned, this place is pretty much a forgotten relic. It was sold a long time ago to the Heart of Dixie Historical Preservation Society.
Who are they? I asked. The mansion was obviously a landmark of some kind, and somebody had been working at restoring the building.
Julie raised her hand. I'm the Heart of Dixie Historical Preservation Society.
She smiled wickedly.
Since it's a non-profit organization, all a perfectly legal front, and I technically don't live here, it sure does save me a bunch of money in property taxes.
So you're a tax evader, too? I mumbled around a mouthful of eggs. Groovy.
There are only a handful of people who know about this house, and most of them wear a green smiley face on their armor, or their last name is Shackelford. She went back to eating.
Julie appeared to be starved, and she should be, considering how much blood she had lost yesterday. She paused, swallowed, and continued.
And I've got this place rigged with one hell of a security system. If anything drives, walks, slithers, or lands on this property, we'll know. There's also a hidden armory in the basement stocked with stuff that would have been confiscated when we got shut down last time. And the compound is only about 15 minutes away. If we get attacked, we'll just need to hold out that long.
Will your security system detect vampires? I asked.
Probably. As far as we know, they still need to walk like anything else. There has never been any actual documented case of them turning into bats or mist like in Dracula. Only superstitions that say that they can shapeshift. But remember, they can't come into a home unless they're invited. That's the rule.
Why is that, anyway? I asked. I mean, I've seen it in the movies, but that doesn't really make any sense.
Nobody knows. But it seems to be a rule with vampires. Other undead don't seem to care, but it does affect vamps, she said. Unless you let them in, they can't enter.
They came into Dr. Turley's house and killed him and his wife, and he was still in bed. They couldn't have been invited. Or what about the attack in Atlanta?
Atlanta was a party. All it would take is a single invited guest to let one in. You guys have only seen newly created vamps. The old ones can be pretty darn charming, and they look just like humans until they're about to feed. As for the Turleys, who knows? Any indication of invitation would probably do.
She forked another piece of egg and dipped it in ketchup.
Did they have a doormat or any signs that may have said welcome or something like that?
I nodded as I remembered the Turley home's open rear door, along with the mud-stained welcome mat. I swore that I would never own one of those things again.
Gargoyles?
Tripp asked.
I've got a Barrett 50, a 20-millimeter Lottie, and some grenade launchers in the armory. Also an RPG, and for the worst-case scenario, a SPIG 9. After we eat, I'll break those out and dust them off. I'm going to need help getting the SPIG up the stairs, Julie said.
I did not know what a SPIG 9 was, but if it was in fact a gun that she needed help to even move, I was very excited.
What about the CO?
Holly asked. I did not like the abbreviated name. After having seen him and feeling a taste of his power, calling the evil creature something so innocuous seemed a little silly. The residents of Tokyo didn't call Godzilla Big G.
Unknown quantity, Julie stated. We have no idea what would work on him. It could be something as simple as just shooting him full of holes, or lighting him on fire, or blowing him up, I don't know. Some monsters are hard to kill.
She looked at me for help. I shrugged. Beats me. The old man won't or can't tell me that. I'll say this, though. I don't expect him to go easy. I've got a feeling that he's going to be one mean son of a bitch. Julie finished her breakfast and pushed the plate away. I dished myself a second helping. Tripp sipped his coffee. Holly made sure her sidearm was still there.
One last thing, Julie said. She was fully confident and back in command mode. If they find us, if we get attacked, and we can't beat them or hold them off until help arrives, if, and only if, the bad guys are about to take Dad away, then we have no choice. Kill him. And do it in a way that they can't bring him back. Shoot him in the head and burn him.
She said this casually, as if she was telling us about the weather.
It's one thing to kill monsters, but it's another to have human blood on your hands. If we have to do it, if possible, I'll do it myself. My family, my business. Everybody okay with that?
The rest of us nodded dumbly. Julie scooped up a plate of rapidly cooling eggs and sausage and passed it over to me.
You had best take him some food. He's probably starved. Tell him I send my regards.
Ray Shackelford was sitting on his bed, one wrist handcuffed to the wrought iron headboard. He regarded me sullenly as I entered. His gray hair was wild, and he had a black eye and bruises from where I had hit him. At least he seemed to be coherent now. "I brought you some food," I said. I did not add that I had only supplied him with a plastic fork.
"Let me loose, kid,"
he ordered. "Can't do that. This is for your own protection."
"Fine, then I'll take a dump on the floor."
I had not thought about that, but then again I had never kidnapped a crazy person before either. I set the food down on a dresser and removed the handcuff key from my pocket. There was an attached bathroom, there was only one way in, and the window over the shower was too small to squeeze out of. I checked the bathroom for any hidden weapons. This was Julie's house, after all, but found nothing.
"Okay, fine. But if you try anything stupid, I will beat you down.
I'm just itching for a reason to get my violence on. Got it? Fine. Just hurry up.
I unlocked the cuffs and waited patiently as he